This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Yeah, it's not like anyone in the crowd's going to come set a pick on us or anything, so I could care less about them.
Burn with the ball, getting hammered by Messenger. Burn with a shot, he scores! Burn on a dash inside the rush zone. Leaving it back to Kluche. He's got room. Kluche takes the shot. Scores. Shot backed up by Smith. Smith to Fraser. Over the shoulder. Scores. Kluche, top of the slot. Back to Dane Smith. Smith with 7 to shoot. Scores.
Oh, what's wrong with a little smack talk on a Wednesday morning? And, yeah, I know, it's a little delayed, but, you know, Bills OTA started yesterday. So, yes, we absolutely did want to dunk on the Saskatchewan Rush for talking a little bit more smack than they can chew. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones here with you. It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Why did we make this open? Well, for two reasons. One, it was exactly what I dreamt of and everything more. Great job, Josh Mitt.
You're welcome.
And second, that was Zach Jones' first game in person watching the NLL and the Buffalo Bandits. It's not the first time you've ever watched them.
No.
But it's the first time you were in Banditland in person.
It was ball. It was awesome. I loved every second of it. The crowd was electric. It was cool seeing the arena packed for something other than kind of one of those specialty nights for the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what I've been to, the RJ night, I didn't go to Ryan Miller night, but you saw the arena packed for those. Like, this was for playoff game, championship stuff, and there was a difference in the environment, in the vibe of the arena.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say nerves. I don't think a single Bandits fan thought they were going to lose.
Yeah.
Even with it going to a game three.
There might have been a couple, but, like, you know.
At least not what I experienced. It was all basically, it felt like a coronation of, like, yeah, we're going to win in Buffalo. This is awesome. Like, yeah. this is great for us.
It's kind of disgusting.
And but, watching that game, Derek, and I won't lie to you, again, like, not being the biggest lacrosse guy. I watch it. I watch a lot of college lacrosse with my cousin. I keep up on it. I keep up on the Bandits. I was a little thrown at the first period where goalie wasn't too great. Saskatchewan, kind of anytime they shot the ball towards the net, it went in. But to watch the second half.
The domination that happened.
In which it felt like a light switch just kind of went off for all the Bandits players. Where they're like, oh, we're better than you. Like, oh, I remember, we're way better than you.
And they scored to make it 7-6. Saskatchewan scored to make it 7-6 and then proceeded to be walked off a cliff.
15-6 is the final score. I think that's the most goals the Bandits have scored in this playoff run, or at least it's the most goals they've scored in a while in these playoffs. And it just walked them off the field. They were like, all right, good job, way to be here. Congratulations on making it.
A couple of players very clearly knowing that Saskatchewan was talking the way that they were after the game.
Oh, yeah.
Boy.
But it was such a cool experience. If you haven't gone to a Bandits game, now as somebody that is meant to go for, I think, the last two, three years, was going to go earlier this year, just got kind of weathered out by that one, and then finally decided to go to this one, absolutely do it. It was a blast to watch. It was really cool to see a team win a third straight. Just win a championship at all.
Yes.
Was really cool. Like, it was something, too, that, like, if you've never seen a championship live in sports, you kind of wonder how quickly they'll put up on the Jumbotron 2020, whatever year, this year being 25, NLL, NFL, NHL,
right,
you know, champions. Newsflash, they do it immediately.
They did also have an entire second half to do it. Like, especially the fourth quarter, where that was a coronation.
Coronation. Complete coronation. They were wasting time.
Yeah.
I don't think they scored in the fourth.
No.
Like, nobody scored in the fourth.
They were just, like, kind of perfectly content with taking 30 seconds off the clock and dump it down.
And just chuck it anywhere. Play good defense. Back to the same thing. Waste a lot of time. Chuck it down. And I couldn't have been happier. It was like that was one of those feelings. And the crowd I was with, it was with two buddies and then a bunch of kind of people I didn't know. But like everyone was like, this is how exactly I want like a Bills Super Bowl to go. Where the second half we're all kind of just celebrating. And by the time the actual final whistle, you know, goes, it's not this euphoric relief, but it's just this kind of, all right, we can officially celebrate, let's go. Like the euphoric relief
like
was
the
a
Eagles
slow build.
Super Bowl.
The Eagles this past Super Bowl, where the entire second half was just kind of this, like, I just can't wait to look at Wikipedia where, like, they added the championship. Like, it's one of those.
Yes.
And, like, that was, like, the cool thing where it was this slow build where I can't even say I had, like, this natural release. I mean, I'm also not the biggest Bandits fan. It's not Bills. It's not Sabres. It's not Texas. But I was still, like, you know, I had the huge grin on my face. And it was kind of this slow build up to the eventual whistle. It wasn't, you know, their last few games against Saskatchewan, where you're thinking
it's
to end the game,
games,
you're, you know, on bated breath, freaking out watching this happen. So cool. I cannot recommend enough going to Bandits games. It's a blast. The crowd is fantastic. The music, if you're honestly, because I know this is probably something for a lot of people, the music really does not get in the way.
No.
During the game, it really doesn't. There was even one moment with about 3 minutes left in the game, they threw out John Denver, Country Road, lost it. I was like, that's cheating. First of all, playing bagpipes to start a game, didn't know that's a thing. Cheating. And then to end the game with John Denver, cheating.
Do we know why?
That's incredible. I don't care. They don't. They may have a reason, or they're just like, it's metal as hell. We're going to do it.
There's probably a reason at this point. Like, you don't keep doing that every year, and I'm just the one that doesn't know what the reason why is. But something you said kind of got me interested in, like, I don't know if it's like a question of the day sort of thing, but like it's a fascinating poll of sorts. Would you rather have a second half coronation, relax, this is your championship, or do you live for the drama? Do you live for that euphoric release?
Oh.
Yeah. Of, I don't know if this is actually going to happen or not. You say that that's how you want your Super Bowl?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's perfectly your right. A championship is a championship nonetheless. But I do find that interesting of like, if I were to tell you that it's going, like, that's the thing, I can't tell you it's going to happen because that's the crux of the second option.
Yeah.
But the way you envision it, it's never that way. It's never comfortable.
No.
The way you envision it for anything is always the opposite. I think it's fitting that a three-peat is coronated with a second half dominance to where the fourth quarter, they're not even offensively trying.
Mm-hmm. Because there's just no point.
That is very fitting for a three-peat. You are dominant. You end the three-peat dominating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fitting. Incredibly fitting. But nobody ever envisions it the way that you say you would prefer it. I might even say, I don't know if I believe you.
It is interesting. I think you're right, too. Like, no one really envisions. Yeah, we won by 50. It was incredible. Like, no.
Nobody does that.
I think especially in Buffalo, I do wonder how many people are like, when they win the Super Bowl, I'd actually love it to be on a last-second field goal to right the wrongs of wide right. I don't think it's a huge portion of fans. I do think there is a semblance of fandom out there that kind of wants it to be, no, I want wide right gone.
I want Tyler Bass to kick, or a random kicker. Expunged.
Yeah.
I want that more than anything else in the world.
See? 803-0550. If you're to win a championship, how is it supposed to look?
But then there are also Bills fans out there that never stop talking about 51-3 in the AFC Championship and how much of a euphoric feeling that felt.
Yes.
So I think there
was a party the entire time.
I think there is a comfortable, happy medium of, Yeah, the blowouts are super cool, and that just that the party atmosphere, the party feeling. But then there's also the really fun feeling of last second iconic moment.
The what kind of sicko are you? 803-0550 is the number to call.
But like the perfect example is college basketball.
Yes,
like there are mid majors that win in the kind of weird, like, oh, you just straight up took down a high major team. You won by 15. It never was particularly close, and you clearly were underseeded. Or you have the teams like a Georgia State in back, I think, in 2014. Ron Hunter Jr. hits a three to win the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, which one do you prefer if you're that Cinderella team?
And I think that that's a question that I don't know how capably we are able to answer it because of the fact that,
yeah,
well, the only team that has won anything is the Bandits.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you go to the Bandits games and you've gone to championship games, which one feels better is what I would say. But nobody really typically envisions the blowout version.
I don't think, yeah, it's the dramatic I don't think so. One. I think that's right.
It's the dramatic one where, like, maybe there's a kneel down to end it. Maybe, maybe. But also, hockey. Overtime winner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, your heart rate's going to be a disaster.
Yes.
But it's why it's often called overtime in the Stanley Cup playoffs is often called the best of sports.
Right. It's the most dramatic.
Because it's the most dramatic.
It leads to the biggest heartbreak on the other side, and you don't know what side of the coin you're on until it happens. But I do find that fascinating that you said that. If I'm watching a championship game, what is going to be more memorable? And that answer is, whichever one happens. It's not like the Bills are punching their ticket to the Super Bowl and it's just like a beatdown. It's like 30-13.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to complain about that?
No.
No.
And that's, I think that's maybe the fun part of the question. I'm not complaining either way. Just what do you prefer?
I'm just intrigued by it.
Yeah.
Of, I didn't expect to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was just it was cool. I mean, but I'm also somebody. It's funny. I am the person that kind of enjoys the ride. I want the ride to be memorable. Like,
yes.
to be perfectly.
That's why I thought it was interesting coming from you.
Yeah,
you are the guy that I know this as your friend. You do like a little bit of the drama.
Absolutely, baby. Absolutely.
Like not through your life, but like your entertainment at least.
My dating history would tell you the opposite.
Exactly. I'm trying to help you, man.
My dating history would tell you the exact
Zachary,
opposite.
I tried to help you, and you said, no, actually, I will go under the bus. But anyway, that's why I thought it was interesting coming from you, knowing that, especially with entertainment purposes, like drama is kind of the king. It is a story.
Yeah.
And, yeah, ultimately, a championship is a championship, but
well, I mean, here
is it an interesting story at that point? How many people tend to remember the blowout wins in Super Bowls, for example? Are they as memorable?
Outside of, I think if it's a dynasty, it's not very memorable.
Exactly.
I think that's right. Like here, you know, Georgia has won a few national championships.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone cares about the TCU one, 62-7.
Right.
It's more remembered because of like, oh, this is a broken system.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what it's remembered for. It's like, this is
right.
not, this is not sustainable.
It's memorized for the wrong reasons.
But here, for you know, my basis, I really, really enjoyed the Bandits blowing it out and it being the party atmosphere in the
right.
fourth and the coronation.
I also think it is the sport and its setting that
it
allows
be.
It to be a party.
Could be. But here, let's use my next favorite team as an example, you know, for that could be up in a championship run. Let's ignore the Angels. They're not making the playoffs. The 8-game win streak was super fun. They immediately cratered to, I think they've now lost 4 straight. Texas. Let's say Texas is in the national championship in January, and it goes to overtime against Oregon, and they win it that way. Field goal. Or we have like another Quinn Ewers play where it's a fourth down touchdown against Arizona State. I might change my tune and be like, that was the best experience of my life.
Right.
I don't know. And I think you're right. Like, as Buffalo fans, it might be very difficult to answer this question because we don't know.
It's do you want the cookie on the table or not, basically? Do you want the cookie on the table or the cookie on the table? You're probably just taking the cookie that's on the table.
Yeah.
But
I'm taking the championship.
No matter what it's flavored like.
I think we've seen a lot of
people. I'm not even going to tell you what the flavor is.
Yeah.
It's a cookie.
Like, here, there's probably a lot of.
But it's going to be good.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of Philadelphia Eagles fans. We know one that wanted Carson Wentz to win a Super Bowl for the Eagles.
Hang on.
But I don't think they cared that Nick Foles won their first one for him.
As a matter of fact, I might bother him about this exactly because as an Eagles fan, they have experienced one of each of those.
Mm-hmm.
The dramatic last minute where New England throws a Hail Mary and it is dropped or batted down.
But a close game to the end.
A close game to the end. And the coronation.
And a blowout.
Mm. Wow, the Eagles really have had both. We need to bother Philadelphia.
Yeah, we need to bother Philadelphia. But like,
there's someone that works here now.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Giacobello made his debut on Saturday. I think we need to bother one of them and say, hey, guys, which one felt more interesting to you or has the better feeling to you? I didn't know we would end up talking about this for as long as we did, but like, that's the smooth brain that is Derek Kramer. I saw something shiny, jingle, jangle, jingle, jangle, and here we go.
It's just I think it's also a fun topic because neither answer is necessarily bad. Like for me, I love Reuben's and Cuban sandwiches, but you do prefer one of them. But I'd also say it depends on the day for me.
Yeah.
So like this weekend, I love the coronation. Next weekend, it might be like, baby, give me overtime, last minute, 45-yard field goal.
I think it's also because you're not directly involved.
1,000%. I'm not on the field. Yeah.
No, not even that. Like you're not in the stands either. Like you're not dealing with the panic.
Oh well, yeah.
Like the next thing that we can watch is like a game 7 in a playoffs right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, but like I want a game 7 so bad for the Sabres. I want to feel that so bad.
So now,
so bad.
On the other side of that coin, being the losing team in that scenario, what is far more painful is easy. It's the close one. You were there.
Ooh.
But watching your team get their teeth kicked in a championship game, that's got to be so annoying.
I think it's
and it's also less memorable because everyone, like, think of your worst Chiefs losses throughout the postseasons.
Yeah.
The first AFC championship game rarely comes up.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills were blown out.
They
were competitive for a little while. I think they even held a lead for a little bit. And then very quickly it fell apart.
Yeah.
13 seconds, though.
That's the first one on the list.
Brought up a lot. I will say, yeah, like if I'm a fan, I probably, if I'm going to lose a championship,
you better rip my heart out.
Ooh. I would prefer to be blown out. I can move on during the game. I can actually start to rationalize it and move on.
Mm-mm.
It took me like a week and a half to get over 13 seconds.
And I was different in that. It took me ultimately like probably 13 minutes to get over 13 seconds,
mm-hmm.
mostly because I was able to watch that game and go, and after the fact go, that was awesome. It's a shame somebody had to lose that game, but that game was great.
I eventually got there.
The game is like a part of greatness. Somebody had to lose that game. Of course it was us in Buffalo that had to suffer that,
mm-hmm.
but someone had to lose that game. If I'm going to watch a team lose, I better be in it to win it.
Oh, no, I think there's being in it to win it, but once the game starts and the result is starting to build.
If a blowout starts happening, I'm kind of like, I wasted my time.
Yeah, but I can get over that a lot faster. I can get over that and move on to next year, the offseason, what have you, where when it is so close, when you've tasted victory and it's snatched from you, that is a bitter pill to swallow that you really don't forget.
And I look at, ready? I drove down the 90 this past weekend to a watch party in Rochester to watch the Americans promptly get smacked around 5-0 in game 5.
Yeah.
Cool. I left before the 5th goal.
I see. See, I think that's healthier. I think it's way healthier than like having to go to overtime and then losing in that fashion.
But I feel like it would have been, I would have had a lot more fun.
You would have had more fun, yeah. But
so that's the thing. I like fun.
I don't care about fun in a loss.
I like fun. This is where, like, I'm Anakin Skywalker piloting through a mess of explosions and ships. This is where the fun begins.
Yep.
Okay? I want to be there, too, even if it is the bitter end.
That's fair. That's fair. For me, no thank you. Give me the easier pill to swallow and we'll move on.
Okay.
803-0550, the number to call. John is up first today. John, good morning. How are we doing?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Good. Congratulations to the Bandits on the three-peat, but they got to thank the Saskatchewan head coach because I was watching that game and, you know, when we started blowing them out in the second quarter, we go up 7-3, they change the goalie, and I'm like, oh, it's over. This is over. And all of a sudden, we had probably five point-blank or breakaway chances that their second-string goalie stuffed us on, and they cut the score to 7-6 at half. And I'm like, holy cow, you know, changing the goalie really worked for him. And I come back from, you know, making some food, watching on TV, and we scored 15 seconds or so into the third quarter, and they got the first string goalie back in there. And we ran up the score on this guy again. I couldn't believe the coach put the other guy back in after the second string goalie shut us out the rest of the way when he was in. Big blunder by the Saskatchewan coach.
Yeah, that's right.
John, that's a really good point. I'll quote Napoleon. Never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake. Also,
That's right. It
did initially feel very Sabres-esque of like, oh, you're doing really, really well.
Oh, you chased the goalie. The goalie and it's going wrong.
And then the backup comes in.
Oh, my God.
And you're like, oh, what the hell
that
happened?
That was this season's Sabres.
That's exactly
what this season. Oh, my God.
But I'd forgotten about it because for most of the second half, you were good. I completely forgot about that. John's absolutely right.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that misery back to me.
I thought it was an equipment malfunction. Again, not watching on TV. I'm not hearing if he's hurt, if he's been pulled. I initially thought it was equipment malfunction. I didn't see.
I thought it was you gave up five straight goals.
Yeah, and you're getting pulled.
And it doesn't look like it's been good.
But to be fair, and this is again relatively new to lacrosse. I don't know how often it would be that you pull your goalie.
It's like hockey in that sense.
You're trying to send a message
to your team. Wake up.
But I also
which they did.
They did.
Why'd you go back to him?
Yeah, that's my thing. But you know what? There's always
maybe
be that
he thought it was
the goalie.
Team.
Yeah, it was,
and
the
not
team.
The goalie that was the cause of this. And no, it was just going to happen like this no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But they did get a boost from this. Yeah, I'm with the caller on that one. Of why'd you go back?
Yeah, no, not right decision at all.
No,
but I can understand the decision from the coach of you want to trust your guy in the last game.
At the same time, if he's not cutting it.
It is the last game.
It's the last game.
And you got to win a championship.
You got to win this thing.
803-0550, the number to call. Talking championships there, what do you prefer, a blowout or drama right to the very end? I think we a little bit disagree, but also I don't think there's really necessarily a wrong answer. Love to hear your thoughts. Coming up at 11 today, we will get a word on the Jacksonville Jaguars, who've had a very interesting offseason. Ryan Green of 1010XL and 92.5 FM in Jacksonville is going to join us at 11 o'clock, but we're free the rest of the day to take your calls, hear your thoughts. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR. Thank you to listener Brandon, who kind of let us know more about the Bandits Saskatchewan goalie pull situation. I thought this was right. I thought the caller was spot on, because I'm like, I'm definitely misremembering this. I didn't look at the numbers. He was not actually out for very long. They pulled him for about a minute and a half, if that. More because they lost a challenge and didn't have a timeout, and he may have had an equipment issue.
Yep.
And so they pulled him. The backup goalie didn't face any shots, and then they went back to who ultimately was the goalie of the
year. It's a way to send a message without pulling the goaltender. Like, you pulled him, but not for very long.
No, and it may have even just been for an equipment issue. Just, hey, we got to get this fixed, and we don't have a timeout now because we wasted our challenge.
Yep.
So get out. Go in for 5 minutes. Get out. So thank you to Brandon for that. Did put up a poll up at my Twitter, at ZacharyJones198. I fully believe this. I don't think there's a wrong answer, but what would you prefer in a championship performance, a blowout win or drama to the end? And right now, 68% blowout win.
A lot of you aren't here for the fun time.
Well, I kind of liked Phil's answer on this here. Depends. If it's my team, I want a blowout win. If it's just any other fan base, give me the drama.
You know what? So because it's looking like it's two-thirds of that vote right now, Josh, I know I've got you in my corner on this.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm going to say this for you right now. When you're watching sports, as a kid, you're growing up, what are the things that you pretend in the driveway, you're shooting on the net? He shoots, he scores, and it makes it 5-1.
No. You think of it is triple overtime. You're the last man back. You make a crazy play, and you break up the ice, and you score the game-winning goal to win the Sabres the Stanley Cup in Game 7 in the arena. And, oh, my God, the crowd's going crazy. That's what you think. That's what you want.
I want tension to stare at me, and I want to punch it in the face.
And honestly, too, I can...
It's the whimsy.
I kind of can see why people might be voting against the drama. Those might be all the people that had already gone through the drama in the 90s. None of us have gone through what those people went through, so I completely understand if that's your reasoning.
You are absolutely right.
But if you're all
right.
If there's anyone out there that's our ages, which is in like your mid-20s, and you're voting for like blowout wins, what are you voting for? Like you've never seen drama.
Yeah.
You've never had this. Sure, we had the Eastern Conference Finals.
You're
in 05,
absolutely
06,
right, though.
The
older portions of the fan base, absolutely, that is a trauma answer.
And it is like,
and I understand.
Give me one and let it be comfortable.
Right.
Yes.
But if you're our ages, 05, 06 is probably the only thing you can remember. And we were what, 6 years old? Like you don't remember that well.
There was a lot of drama. My age, like a millennial, like you're in high school,
right?
At
yeah.
best.
But still,
when those hockey teams are trying to do what they're doing,
yeah,
and
I just can't. I would love,
for nothing more. It's, when you're a kid, that goal you shoot into that net, you're playing with your friends. No, it's not for 5-1.
No,
when you're creating that scenario,
it's for 1-0.
If you're shooting it at the shooter tutor as a kid, this isn't to make it a 4-goal lead. This isn't Chris Paul hits a big three to get to drop the score within 40.
No, I want nothing more than to someday spring out of wherever I am, spring out of my seat, and scream because, hey,
I'll tell you
Josh
right
Allen
now,
just threw a Hail Mary to win the Super Bowl with no time on the clock.
Let me bring something in that actually does have a little bit of recency bias to it. The Bills breaking the playoff drought. They did not do that comfortably at all. As a matter of fact, another team was winning comfortably, and then it became a disaster. I remember exactly where I was. I'm out in the newsroom with DiBiase, Geary, and our program director, Alan Davis. The Tyler Boyd touchdown happens, and we scatter in the four directions of
we
the
scatter.
Wind. We all start running in the four directions of the wind. Nate goes one way, Joe goes the other, Alan starts taking off down a hallway, and I run by the studio. Which is why Bulldog is able to say, do you hear the screaming? It's because one of these morons of us starts running by this window. It happens to be the loudest of them. But still, I remember all of that.
And like thinking of that right there too, like
it's
just
the
hearing...
whimsy of sport. It is... It's what makes it beautiful, I guess. I'm not trying to make an argument against the case, because like you said, there is no wrong answer, but I do believe that some people are trying to play it safe because they don't want to get hurt. Getting hurt is what makes it all the more delicious. Because everyone has it in their life that they're dealing with something and it's kind of crappy at minimum. But for one beautiful moment, it's on your side.
Yeah. I think that maybe is also where...
It's the whimsy to me that really speaks to it.
The whimsy of it, but for drama as well, like it is more memorable.
Yes!
Your reaction will be more memorable than just... They're both championship performances. And especially if you're in a city or a team that has never won one, it doesn't matter. Like, it'll feel amazing regardless.
Right.
But there is something, I think, league-wide, nationally, and even just for you personally, you'll remember more. The
you know
last
exactly.
second field goal, the game seven overtime winner. You'll remember that far more because your reaction will be so much more visceral. It'll be so much more sudden and, oh my God, all right, it's done. We won. It's over. Where for the Eagles this year, it was pretty much from halftime on.
The second quarter on.
Yeah, like, okay, we won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, this is incredible. But again, like, I think some people, though, will prefer, like, by the fourth quarter, like, it is just this relaxing relief that it's over rather than the euphoric relief that it's over.
Nah, I want my joy to be uncertain and then absolute in a second.
Hmm.
That...
And this is only a conversation we can have in May, by the way.
Yes.
Because come January or February, just
the arrogance of saying that would doom us all.
I will also be leading the charge of just win one, baby.
Yes.
Like just win. Like,
I
don't
know that
care.
That's why it had to be a poll.
Yeah.
Is because enough people would just say, I don't care how, as long as it happens.
And I think that's right. That's why I think there's no wrong answer to which one would you prefer.
And that's the all-encompassing portion of this. But, yeah, I just think about this as, I love the idea. And this is why I get into this. Like, why we're here in this studio. Why we do any of this. It's for story.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy a story. And what bigger story is there than the dramatic finish? What better story is there than who knows how this is going to end? And that's where I think it all comes from. So to the 72% of you, the number is now going up.
Yeah.
Come on.
I can understand either
Bring
one.
Bring the whimsy.
I can understand either one. My only championship performance I got
Stare
to see was a blow
at
one. I loved it.
Tension and smack it in the face.
There is
Where's the sense of wonder?
I think there is though, like there is something about it of like, no, I Josh's point I think is spot on too of like, I've experienced the drama in the worst ways. Give me just one where I can relax and put my feet up and feel all those years of pain get washed away for 3 hours.
Yes, because there is this whole, like, you don't know if you're going to actually get that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is also, we are talking about championships. Like, it's going to end up happening.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason that we get into this is also the chase.
Oh, God, yeah. That's one of the main reasons I love sports. I think it's the best drama.
So why would you prefer not to be chasing all the way to the end?
Well, I mean, because some season finales, you know, every hero has plot armor, and it just works out for
them.
Those
aren't the greatest stories, are they?
They can be, though.
Sometimes.
They
but like,
can be. And the journey is oftentimes the struggle. Watching a team in the regular season, you know, grind through it, not be perfect, injuries, what have you, but when they get to the playoffs, when the lights are brightest, they put a whooping on them. Funny enough, Super Bowl history is full of blowouts.
I know.
And so, like, that's the thing, too. It hasn't ruined football. It hasn't ruined the juggernaut that is the NFL. A lot of Super Bowls for a long time were more coronations for one particular team. One of those teams was just thrilled to be there. Not always. There has been close ones, and especially more recently. But for a lot of Super Bowl history, it's been blowouts. Now, I don't disagree. We remember the more surprising, shocking endings. It's the same in any sport.
Yeah.
But it's also because, yeah, it is the instant relief. But I think if you're someone that wants a championship, I think we all kind of just want to be like the unstoppable force. Look at the Eagles. The Eagles almost lost to the Rams in the playoffs. Probably should have.
Right.
The way that game was going. No one really remembers that. Everyone just remembers how much of a whooping they put on the Chiefs and how dominant they looked. Now, or at least for a 2-month run to end the season, Eagles could do no wrong. Don't remember that Jalen Hurts for like a month and a half had that Eagles passing game in hell.
I'm still.
No one remembers that. No one cares.
I'm still here to say it's okay to be vulnerable, because that's ultimately what it is, right?
Oh, the willingness to be vulnerable.
The willingness to feel vulnerable. And that is something that I know is not something that a lot of people want to have in their lives. That ease, that comfort. Look, man, this isn't a bowl of pasta.
It's good comfort food.
Good comfort.
It's not pot roast for comfort food, but, you know, it's close. It's close.
It's the most common one that people will agree with.
Yeah.
But
it's wrong, but, you know, yeah. I get it.
Tested it, eh? But I feel like this was a fun little mini discussion to have, at least for a couple of segments of I would love to see no matter what happens, I will not be picky.
No.
But I know the victories that I've watched that have been witnessed, the ones that I remember are the ones that are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The snapping of the playoff drought. The game, was it game five against the Rangers? Game five against Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you also remember the heartbreaking losses, of course, but I do think that that's part of it too. If the Bills were to win one, we remember the close games and all the pain that they caused. Because those are the scars that people remember the most. Not the time that you got smacked around in the AFC Championship.
That's right. 803-0550, the number to call. Ryan Green, host down in Jacksonville, will be joining us here in just a little over 15 minutes. Before we hit our next time out, I do want to remind you to join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you will receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal of $10,000 before the ride. Visit WGR550.com for details. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Had a little fun this hour talking about which way you'd prefer to win a championship performance. It's May. Be nice. Be kind. I do think it's an interesting topic, though, because while, yes, I think either answer is correct, there is something to, I want drama to the end, or I want a blowout win and I want to celebrate the entire time. I think, though, zero tweets in maybe... I think maybe the correct answer, if there is one, I don't think there is, but maybe it's the closest right. It is. I thought the Bandits game three was the ideal championship performance. Very competitive first half, but still have the lead. Then a complete dominance in the second half, the best of both worlds. And kind of to my response to that I gave them was, yeah, get the nerves going early, but then alleviate them in real time.
But yeah, that is something of like, it's a best of both worlds scenario. Where like you do start to feel relatively nervous. What about the opposite? You get out to a big lead early, and then you wonder if
that's
going to happen.
Worst.
I think we found our worst answer. Start comfortable, and then have to end it with like, because that's not drama to the end.
No, that's drama building, and you're going. No, not again.
That's drama showing up.
Yeah, that's drama showing up. And
drama ended up late to the party, and we were like, what are you doing? And the next thing you know, he's doing four keg stands in a row, and you're worried about the danger of the house.
Yep. I think that's the thing is you never want a championship performance or game seven performance, whatever, what have you, to end on the phrasing, thank God that's over.
Yes. Because the dramatic win there's no thank God it's over. It's oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah, you're grabbing the person closest to you, you're hugging people, and it's just we did it. I think with that performance, it would be. I think for most of that, it would be anger. Honestly, like, could you? Boston Celtics.
Yeah,
in the
I can't
playoffs
believe this is happening to us.
2 20-point leads in the second half. You lose both of them.
Oh, my God.
I think even if they won that series,
you're like,
there is still
I don't
frustration
trust them,
of, like,
yeah.
What is going on? You know, and it would be the same thing if, let's say, for the Eagles example. I think we're right. I mean, it's basically over at halftime. But let's say, for argument's sake, the Chiefs roar out to a big lead. Or, better example, 28-3. Let's say the Falcons do win that late. Not to overtime, but they close it out, they win it late.
Ultimately, it still ends up at that euphoric of like, oh my God, we did it.
It does.
But by God, the misery you start to gain.
I think it does ruin watching that game, enjoying the whole thing.
Yes.
Whether it being close and you're battling and it's two
great
teams.
We found the wrong answer.
It becomes very quickly, I can't watch this, I'm going to be sick.
Yes.
And it's not the good one of my nerves have gotten me and it's got to be the field goal. It's got to be they are making me genuinely angry.
And that is
and
different.
And every sports fan's been there where you have the lead and you're giving it up and you're watching it in real time slip away. That, I think, would almost be more demoralizing. And that's why
the Ravens game.
The Ravens game. The Ravens game.
The Ravens game is this.
Mm-hmm.
Is the worst answer.
Where the you're first, dominating, it's like we're going to the AFC Championship
the game. Previous Ravens playoff game is more akin to that drama to the end sort of thing. And then in the fourth quarter, you're more comfortable with it, but it's not a blowout.
Yeah, yeah.
But you do know, like, all right, it's going our way. Yeah, no, I think we found the worst answer. Comfortable to start and a near collapse.
Well, I mean, like,
It's still a championship at the end of the day, but that's definitely the third on my rankings.
I will also say, too, and I know I've gotten some heat about this for reverse AFC power rankings when Shelton Bulldog were doing them after that game. I had the Ravens ranked as higher than the Bills because I was like, yeah, the best team didn't win that day. The entire second half was the Ravens being like, oh, yeah, we're better. And they just started marching up and down the field, and the Bills had a real problem with it. Now, ultimately, the Bills win the game, and it is one of the better playoff wins in the McDermott-Allen era. But it did leave, like, a really bad taste in my mouth, even going to the AFC Championship game a little bit, because it was more just the excitement. But there was that little bit of, okay, all right, maybe the best team is out, but, man, that was stressful. And I don't trust them 100%, but maybe I don't need to. Like, that's where it became, I don't care about turnover luck this year. I don't care about any of it. They're just getting it done. Maybe it's their year. Championship game, maybe you feel a little better about it. And maybe going to the AFC Championship game or a championship game, you feel better about it.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
In the moment, that's awful.
That's tough.
Yep. What was my reaction to Mark Andrews dropping the ball?
I was at the game, and I was the first person in my section to see the ball come out.
Oh,
like humble brag.
We're all staring, and I just goes, balls out, and they were like, oh, like we all like went crazy.
Everyone's lost it.
Out of context, that's a much different sentence.
I can't remember my reaction. I know during that playoff run, I was losing my mind in here, like just enjoying the whole thing. And I don't know if I even cheered or just kind of like put my hands on my knees and took a breath. And that might have been it.
Yeah, I think nobody wants that scenario.
No. 803-0550, the number to call. But coming up after a quick timeout, Ryan Green of 1010 down in Jacksonville will join the show. We'll get a word in on the Jaguars, who had a very eventful offseason and could be a surprise team out of the AFC South. We'll get Ryan's thoughts on that when we come back. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself. Right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief. He's a rare person, he's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him.
There is Jacksonville Jaguars first-year GM James Gladstone, who made a bit of a splash this year in Green Bay for this year's draft as he moved up pretty aggressively to go get the Heisman Trophy winner in Travis Hunter. And for more on the Jacksonville Jaguars, I believe they've had a very eventful offseason.
Yes, they have.
Up to this point, we are joined by, on the Western Hotline, Ryan Green of 1010XL down in Jacksonville, better known down there as Hacker. And Ryan, I do got to ask, which one do you want us to call you? Because I assume that might be just for the Jacksonville fans, but you do have it on your Twitter, Hacker.
Yeah, it's a long story. It goes back about 20 years. My show down here is literally called Hacker After Dark. So unless my mother or my wife, when she's mad at me, I'm Hacker to everybody else. So Ryan's on the birth certificate, but that's about the only place it exists.
Well, I am not your mom or your wife, so we'll be going with Hacker. Hackerman, thank you so much for taking some time out of your morning. And yeah, the Jaguars, they went from a team where, I mean, they were the punching bag for a lot of the earlier jokes this offseason with the Trent Baalke situation. Are they going to fire him? Are they not? Has the owner kind of outright said in a meeting with the media that, yeah, if a GM candidate or a head coaching candidate, excuse me, came to us and said, I want him gone, I might think about it. It was a weird situation. What was that like for you guys?
It was radio gold, as Fair. You guys yeah. can imagine. Mm-hmm. When the season ended on January 6th, there was doom and gloom. They fired Doug Peterson that Monday morning, Black Monday, and they retained Trent Baalke. And the anger in this city, guys, for those 16 days was unlike anything I've ever seen. And Ben Johnson, I actually think Ben Johnson was 1 and Liam Cohen was 1A. I think both of them were very high on the Jaguar list. When Ben Johnson went to Chicago, then they turned all of their attention to Liam Cohen. And when Liam Cohen backed out, that's when owner Shad Khan knew he had to do something. And Trent Baalke was literally relieved of his duties like 3 hours later. Liam Cohen comes back into the fold, ultimately gets the job. We remember how all that played out. Then they go and get James Gladstone. He just played that soundbite. He's been an unbelievable breath of fresh air. And I've been doing this for 20-plus years down here. I'm very blessed to have done this for so long. It has been the most eventful offseason to me in the history of the Jaguars, and I don't really think it's close.
I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to like say it like that because I'm like, well, I'm not a Jaguars fan. I watch them from outside, but I have felt like the Jaguars have been on everyone's mouth for at least once a month, every month for this offseason. I even forget, too, like, yeah, the Liam Cohen thing. From the outside, it felt like I was watching an Ocean's 11 movie. He was in Jacksonville, then he was gone. Tampa's upset that he's just vanished miraculously out of nowhere. Then he's the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. It was a really wild turn of events there.
It was, and it was all Trent Baalke related. Nobody wanted to work with Trent Baalke. And once Liam Cohen took his name out of the running, and he didn't say this publicly, but, I mean, Trent Baalke's fired 3 hours later, and then all of a sudden Liam Cohen comes back into the running. I mean, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but connect the dots there. It was all Baalke related. Once Baalke was out of the picture, things cleared up very nicely. And we didn't even mention the fact that Tony Boselli, the only Hall of Famer in franchise history, is now the executive vice president of football operations. So it's really a three-headed monster down here, guys. Now it's general manager James Gladstone, 34 years old, a 39-year-old head coach in Liam Cohen, and the Hall of Famer Tony Boselli as the EVP of football operations. Those are the three guys that report directly to owner Shad Khan. And those are the three guys that are in charge now of this organization.
Hack, the more interesting the offseason is, the more that people want to talk about these sorts of things. That was just the start of it, of like the Baalke drama, Liam Cohen, and then having Boselli hired as executive. It's like everything got more and more interesting. And then the draft shows up, and ho-hum casually, Jacksonville marches in there to grab Travis Hunter at number 2, making a huge splash for Gladstone in his first draft and first major move as the general manager. And it's a steep price. It's a dangerous price that oftentimes you don't see that risk kind of made unless it's by, like, say, a GM that's, like, trying to save their job. Gladstone swings for the fences almost immediately on the drop here for Hunter, and it does cost next year's first-round pick.
Yeah, it does, and there's certainly some risk that comes with that. But let's think back a little bit, guys. James Gladstone was Les Snead's guy in L.A. for 8 years. What did Les Snead do year after year after year? He would trade 2 first-rounders for Jalen Ramsey or 2 first-rounders for Matt Stafford. I think L.A. actually went 7 or 8 years where they did not have a first round pick. And that hasn't seemed to matter because the Rams are so good with player acquisition, so good in the mid to late rounds of the draft. And that's exactly where James Gladstone learned about this from his guy, Wes Snead. So now he gets an opportunity here in Jacksonville. And before we even get to Travis Hunter, the Jaguars signed 13 free agents outside the organization. They didn't re-sign any of their own guys. I mean, think about that for a second. You bring in 13 guys from other teams. You don't re-sign any of your own. It's obvious what they thought of the job here that Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson did last year. It's been a complete roster turnover. You get to the draft, everybody's talking about Mason Graham. And, yeah, he would have been nice, I guess. But James Gladstone's a guy, like I said, that wants to make a statement. And, boy, did they ever make a statement. And my thought on the first-round pick next year is this. We're going to know who wins that trade based on how the Jaguars do. If that draft pick is anywhere from 1 to maybe 12 or 13, I think Cleveland clearly wins the trade. If the draft pick is 13 through 19, it's probably a wash. And if that draft pick is 20 or higher, I think Jacksonville wins the trade. In a bad AFC South, Jacksonville thinks they can compete this year, and they don't think it's far-fetched to believe they could challenge the Texans for the division. And if that happens, and if they win the division, that draft pick becomes 25, and there will be a lot of people very upset about that in Cleveland, Ohio.
On the Western Hotline, Hacker, Bunny's birth certificate does say Ryan Green of Tenton XL down in Jacksonville. And Hacker, I'm kind of glad you brought up the AFC South, because for me on draft night, me, Derek, and our fellow host here, Nate Geary, do the draft coverage. And Derek, I don't know if you maybe got there with us, but me and Nate, I know when that was made, we both looked at the Jaguars and went, I think it might be their division now. Yeah. When you add Brian Thomas Jr., I still have a lot of faith in Trevor Lawrence, and now you add in kind of this dynamo in Hunter that might be one of the best college players we've seen in recent memories. Hacker, what are the vibes now with the Jaguars, with how exciting this offseason's been, with the fact, like you said, they didn't even bring back any of their own guys. They've really started fresh. But I got to be honest, this is some of the better vibes I felt from Jacksonville, I'd say, in the last 2 or 3 years.
The idea of Travis Hunter and Brian Thomas Jr. is unbelievably appealing here in Jacksonville, as you mentioned, with Trevor Lawrence. Don't discount what they did in free agency with De'Ami Brown. De'Ami Brown's a guy that in the playoffs last year in Washington really made an impact for Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. He had like 14 grabs in those three playoff games for almost 300 yards, a handful of touchdowns. They're very high on De'Ami Brown as well, who came in here on a one-year kind of prove-it deal. So they think they have a three-headed monster at wide receiver. The thing with the Jaguar offense is Trevor Lawrence hasn't been able to stay healthy the last couple of years. And he hasn't stayed healthy because the offensive line has been absolutely atrocious. So Tony Boselli, now being the EVP of football operations, what do the Jaguars do? They go out and they bring in 4 free agent offensive linemen, and they draft 2 in the NFL draft. So 6 new offensive linemen have been brought in here. They're going to have a brand new center in Robert Hainsey from Tampa, a brand new offensive guard in Patrick McCary from Baltimore. They brought in Fred Johnson, who started 6 games for the world champion Eagles last year. He's going to compete with Walker Little at left tackle. They love Wyatt Milam, the third-round pick out of West Virginia. He might challenge Ezra Cleveland for that left guard spot. A lot of newness on the offensive line. Obviously, it takes time to mesh and build that chemistry, and I get that. But if that offensive line can come together and you give Trevor time with the weapons they believe they have now, this offense under Liam Cohen, we know what he did with Baker Mayfield last year, this offense, guys, has the potential to be pretty good.
And that leads into right where I was going here, Hacker, and that is Trevor Lawrence. It's been a sour taste in the mouth for the past couple of seasons when it comes to Lawrence, be it injury or regression, or ultimately something that I know of a narrative that we've heard around here in Buffalo, turnovers. Lawrence has struggled a little bit to take care of the ball the last 2 years. What's Liam Cohen's impact and the hope around that offense mean for Jacksonville, and in particular under center with Lawrence, who it's almost turning into make or break time, almost turning into that for Trevor Lawrence, the former number one overall pick?
He has not been good. He has not lived up to expectations, and he'll be the first to tell you that. Now, I'm not trying to defend Trevor Lawrence, guys, but what I will say is he hasn't exactly been dealt the best hand in his 5 years so far in the NFL, being drafted by Urban Meyer in that disaster, Doug Peterson and Press Taylor coming here. And look, Doug Peterson's a Super Bowl winning coach. But the Jaguar offense for the last year and a half was putrid. It looks like, you know, the game had passed Doug Peterson by. They were so unbelievably predictable. I mean, if you go back to his last year at Clemson, this is going to be Trevor's fourth different head coach in 6 years, his fourth different offensive coordinator in 6 years. It's going to be his third straight year with a different starting center. I mean, how can you build chemistry, cohesiveness with that as your backdrop? So that's not an excuse. That's just reality. Now, having said that, we know what Liam Cohen did with Baker Mayfield. We know what Liam Cohen's pedigree is on the offensive side of the ball. They go out and get Grant Udinski from Minnesota, a 29-year-old offensive coordinator who's one of these whiz kids. Kevin O'Connell loved Grant Udinski up in Minneapolis. He comes in as the OC. They've surrounded Trevor with talent like Travis Hunter, like Brian Thomas Jr. I mentioned De'Ami Brown as well. If Trevor's going to do it, he's going to be given all the tools to do it this year. It's going to come down to that offensive line. If they can keep Trevor upright, I believe Trevor's on pace to have a pretty good year, maybe his best year ever as a pro. He was pretty good in 2022 when he was healthy the entire year. If that happens again in 2025, I think he'll be pretty good again.
2022, over 4,000 yards, 25 touchdowns, 8 picks. That's what you wanted from a guy like Trevor Lawrence. And now with Brian Thomas Jr., you mentioned De'Ami Brown as well, and of course Travis Hunter. As an outsider looking in, I am very, very excited for the season. And the season, by the way, Hacker, starts off really well for him. Carolina at home at Cincinnati, a team that is historically horrendous in September, and then the divisional game against Houston could be a really nice start to the year.
It could be. That Carolina game's big. Like you said, Cincinnati does not play well at the beginning of the year. We'll see. Circle that Houston game. That's the Azeez Al-Shaair return to Jacksonville. We know that ridiculously dirty cheap shot that he gave Trevor last year. Trevor was knocked out for the season because of that. Jaguar players, a lot of them are still pissed about that. So that could be a very interesting backdrop to that game in week number 3 here in Jacksonville.
All right, Hacker. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Hopefully we can talk again soon.
Hey, gentlemen, anytime. Take care.
Yeah, appreciate it there.
On the Western Hotline, that was Hacker. Birth certificate, though, says Ryan Green of 1010XL down in Jacksonville. I'm glad he said it right off the rip that this was maybe the most exciting Jacksonville Jaguars offseason ever. Because that's how I felt. But again, I'm an
behind
outsider.
The scenes, we were like this. We were thinking, like, looking around the league of, like, what are teams that are fascinating? Because we're going to be reaching out about other teams and talking about them.
Especially the AFC.
The first answer I said was Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and I remember draft night.
You didn't
night,
think about it much. You like Jacksonville.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, on that draft night, I remember my initial reaction was I was mad at Cleveland. Not necessarily that it was a great move by Jacksonville, but I'm like, oh, Cleveland's passing up on the guy.
Well, I remember, Sal was talking to us about somebody was in the media room that grew up a Cleveland fan.
Yep.
I'm blanking on which media member it was. But they were upset about it, too. Yeah. Basically being like, what are you doing? This is a can't-miss guy. He's going to put butts in seats. He's going to be a dominant player
for
you.
And then it evolved into, it's a risk, but Jacksonville's willing to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bad division. You could take advantage of that. And that's where it was. I remember, it came back to me. The first reaction was, oh, I was mad at Cleveland. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Sure, you get another first-round pick. Can't wait for Andrew Berry to screw that up.
I mean, I mentioned it too. Like, you look at Cleveland, when they have two first-round picks, they typically bungle both of them.
Yeah, when they have two picks, it typically does not end well for them.
Gilbert and Manziel, anybody? Justin Gilbert, cornerback. Johnny Manziel, quarterback. Nightmare of a first round.
Right. So, more or less, though, Jacksonville does become this team of, they took a massive risk to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first move that this guy makes as the general manager. But Hacker very much reminds us he worked under Les Snead, a man who has become notorious for being aggressive with his first round picks if there are players that need to be acquired to make a team better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love that because of the fact that he knows what is needed. He also is taking a calculated risk. This isn't Tim Murray swinging for everything and banking on them being great right away. This is a calculated risk. It also puts him in very hot water if they win 4 games again.
Yes.
But at that point, it turns into, well, you won four games probably because of the quarterback.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be too good for this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And while he has not lived up to those expectations, neither has that entire draft class.
No, that's right.
But he has shown he can do it. Get the man a little bit of stability.
Yeah. By the way, Josh Reed, WIBB's sports director.
I thought it was
that's
Josh.
That's who I was thinking of. It was bothering me. I had to find out.
I didn't want to say it.
But he was the Cleveland fan that was like, what are you doing? Yeah, I the one thing I'll push back on you, though, I think it is make or break time for Trevor Lawrence. I like 100% full stop.
I think he got the big
contract.
I think we need the year two of Liam Cohen to really get the answer. I think it's almost there only because, yeah, I would still like to see a couple years out of him under the same coach. And if you can't do it then, all right, get out.
I think that is right. I also think football's not fair.
This isn't about fair. This is about logic.
Well, yes, but also, like Hacker pointed out, they didn't bring back any of their free agents. This also might be a thing of James Gladstone and Liam Cohen are not going to sink with the Trevor Lawrence ship, especially, let's go off of what James Gladstone has already done. He can trade stuff. There will be a team out there willing to pay heaven and earth for the prospect still that is Trevor Lawrence, because somebody out there, Colts, absolutely could be one of those teams. Cleveland could absolutely be one of those teams again that could want a Trevor Lawrence type guy and could just argue it didn't work in Jacksonville, even with the high number that he has on his contract. Now, is that more likely? No, because I also think Trevor Lawrence is going to figure it out. Liam Cohen, I think, is a wonderful offensive mind. And talking about what he did with Baker Mayfield, it was just a continuation. Dave Canales, now in Carolina, got Baker to where it's like, okay, yeah, you earn a deal, you've won a playoff game, what have you. Liam Cohen he's thrown 41 touchdown passes, and Mike Evans was hurt for a little while. Chris Godwin was hurt for most of this year, and he still threw 41 touchdown passes. I think it will work. I think it's more the idea of if it doesn't, it's probably an indictment on Lawrence.
Yes. At the same time, you might want to look at the contractual obligations. 2 years from now, it makes more sense because you only lose $9 million in totality on the dead cap versus the cap hit.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to do it next year, the dead cap is $88.5 million. Hit of 24.
Yeah, I'm not saying they have to trade him this offseason if it doesn't work.
Yes.
But it more is like we're going to now draft his replacement.
We're drafting his replacement. But,
and we're getting ready to move on.
And then we're getting ready to move on. But that's ultimately 2 years is where it makes the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we're almost there. I do think that it would also have to take an absolute crash out under Liam Cohen
to move on
immediately.
And that's why I want to say I don't think it's very likely. I do think there is a lot of talent in Lawrence. I don't know, though, if he is good.
I think that's why the full measurement
can get him to maybe his best.
And that's why the full measurement for me is 2 years. That is where it is. It's almost time to move on. Almost.
It is something, though, looking at his 2022
season. Unless he crashes and burns this year.
Mm-hmm.
Say it's okay, or like it's good, or it's like Daniel Jones. It's not like that's not encouraging. But I'm not ready yet to move on. I'll give it one more year. Yes, I might draft the replacement, but I don't have a first-round pick to do that. So it's 2 years.
I think, though,
everything points to 2 years.
If he gets to that 2022 year, though.
Yeah.
We're all hunky-dory. We're fine.
Yeah, everything's fine. But if it's not that.
Wait, and like you said, it would take a crash out from Lawrence where you're like, oh, he's not going to get this.
It would take a crash out, but you also don't have a first-round pick to draft his replacement.
No, but that's fine.
There are other ways to acquire a quarterback. Yeah. You are right about that. But I'm just thinking about like the long-term.
I think there's also, with Gladstone, we'll just deal with this year. We're already pivoting towards, what would that be, 27?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. For hell or high water, for better or for worse, 2027 is the new direction that the Jaguars may have to take.
I look at their team, and that's the thing is – Are they going to win 14 games? No, I'm not saying that. But I do look at them with that offense, with the potential that I still think is in there for Lawrence. Because you again look back 2 years ago, 2022, over 4,000 yards, 25 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions, and that's without Brian Thomas Jr. or Travis Hunter on his team. I mean, I have a hard time looking at him they not
went
thinking
and
he'll
shoved
be
big money at Christian Kirk.
That's right. They sort of reset the wide receiver market with Kirk. But I have a hard time, and especially I didn't even mention at San Francisco's their Week 4 game. I don't particularly like San Francisco's roster. I think that could be the game that sort of ushers in this new era of Jacksonville football if this does work. The Houston game, yeah, there is that. There's the storyline. It's still a 1 o'clock game in Jacksonville. It won't be a nationally seen game.
But if you have a solid start right away and then get to Week 4,
but the thing, you'll be 3-0 going into the 4-0-5 window at San Francisco, and it'll be like, okay,
are you for real?
Yeah, show us who you are. And I think Hunter was easily the best receiver in this draft class. I think Brian Thomas Jr. was the second best receiver in a very good rookie class last year, only beaten out by Malik Nabers.
I would say it's kind of like last year for them. Week 4 kind of told us who they were.
That's right.
On the national stage. It wasn't good.
No. Last year they started 0-4.
Right.
But it was at Houston. They lose 24-20. Well, actually, no, it was Week 3 the national stage against the Bills, where they go 0-3, and they do lose 47-10. But that's the thing. I mean, like, they are 2-9 at the bye. We knew very quickly. They lose to Miami 20-17. They lose to Cleveland 18-13. Close games, and then
it's the way they lose to Buffalo on a national stage where you're like, okay, so you guys are dead this year?
Yeah, you're not good. Doug Peterson will be fired. At the time, we all kind of also assumed Trent Baalke would just be fired. It got weird, but
it got weird.
But now they seem to have really righted the ship.
Hey, man, wrong process to get the right results still ends in the right results.
Again, Napoleon, not going to interrupt my enemy when they're making a mistake. Sometimes you get lucky where all of a sudden, Liam Cohen was like, I'm going to exit stage right. And they go, wait, never mind. We'll fire Baalke. And then you get Gladstone, who to start has really flashed. We'll see if that lasts. We'll see if it even means anything.
Right.
But it worked for him. And maybe they wind up with all of this without all the drama with Baalke. But as you've mentioned with the championship stuff. Sometimes you live for the drama. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here until 12 o'clock before we get you ready for Sabres Live. This is WGR.
Just for all these young guys, it's new, right? So you're trying to get to know them as people. You're trying to get to know them and their skill set, where they need to improve in terms of their strength, their speed, whatever it is. We kind of a little bit of a skill assessment or a needs assessment on, hey, where are they more likely to pull early just from a medical standpoint? So there's a lot that they go through from a filter standpoint or evaluation standpoint when they first arrive. And really, it's trying to integrate them and getting them moving.
That's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Mentioning the rookies as they are integrating with the veterans for the first time in OTAs. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Kramer and Jones,
woo,
here with you. It's fitting to bring that one back as Sal was talking to Josh.
I haven't watched Cops, by the way, since we created that open, which is so bad on me. So bad on me.
Oh, what you going to do? but also, OTAs is the first time that we get to see that blend of the rookies and the... And the veterans at the same time here. I don't know what else to really worry about necessarily. I think that when it comes down to it, I'm excited for who's going to step up, who is going to end up taking a role that this was an AFC Championship team. This was a top four team in the league. Is there going to be a young kid that steps in, takes a role right away? That's a big deal. You look at my biggest job now, though, with OTAs is I have to calm Zach down.
Yeah, you got
to
make sure I don't have my Andy Isabella phase. I joke with Sneaky Joe as we were leaving. I'm like, man, I feel I'm getting close to that, man. I'm getting towards the edge.
Need to tell you, it was day one of OTAs. I do not begrudge your excitement. I do want to help calm you down. Or do I?
Yeah, no.
Considering that I'm all about the drama, apparently.
Nope.
Maybe I just let you do this. Maybe I do let you just go overload on the Elijah Moore love to a point where it does become irrational.
You should. Like, a real friend would let me crash out when, like, we're in week three of training camp, and it's like, yeah, guys, Elijah Moore's not making the team as my sanity slowly slips.
Look, I'll just have the couch ready for you, okay?
Yep.
I'll have the couch ready for you when everything turns into a disaster.
I've now joked the last 2 days. I'm having a really tough time, like, staying rational. And a lot of it is I love the player out of Ole Miss, and I thought he was poorly used in New York and had a really bad situation.
Right.
And when he flashed, you saw all of the talent. And the same was true in Cleveland. And ultimately, even going to his last year in Cleveland, in which, yes, his yards per reception still fell, it fell a full 2 yards. In 2023, he was at 10.8 yards per reception. Last year in 24, he was at 8.8 yards per reception. It's not great. Still at 61 catches, which would have been good for second in terms of Bills wide receivers this past year.
And there is some context to that, of course. Deshaun Watson, before he gets injured, almost notoriously at this point, is not pushing the field.
It can't. Even when he tries to, it's like, oh.
It's not good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of short passes. And then, I mean, the quarterback room is Jameis Winston and Dorian Thompson.
Hey,
Robinson.
Nice. You be nice about Winston.
Nope, I don't. Well, ready? No, I shouldn't be nice because Winston is that risk taker and he wasn't.
I rescind my point.
Mr. 30 for 30, 30 and 30 himself.
That's my point.
Exactly. So it turned into this like weird situation where I do believe you saw it where his average yards per reception went down a whole 2 yards.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That is ghastly work to a receiver's production. And if you still could get decent numbers, though, with that quarterback room in that situation in that season with Cleveland, you should be excited a little bit.
It warranted 102 targets.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
His moves warranted 102 targets. And considering the uncatchable ball percentages from Watson,
yes,
or Winston or DTR, that means at least he's getting open enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they just cannot get it to him.
I want to see in terms of targets where they would rank on the Bills for everybody. And oh boy.
Oh boy.
In terms of targets.
Yes.
They would put him at 1.
That makes sense.
Khalil Shakir had 100 targets. Now that is much more the Bills' offense. Elijah Moore himself has spoken on it. He's really into the idea of everyone eats. So I don't expect him to have 102 targets with the Bills, even if he hits. Don't get me wrong. I look at the
player. But let's add
he is.
Some nuance to that. Mm-hmm. Ready? First half of the season, he's got Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
Jerry Judy's on this roster, is he not?
I believe so, yeah.
He still gets 102 targets?
And there's also like during the period where Jerry Jeudy pops off. Remember when Winston comes in, Jeudy all of a sudden is like, oh wait, like that's the guy we all saw out of
the quarterback
Alabama.
Can actually get me a little bit of the ball down the field.
Yeah, he had 90 catches, just over 1,200 yards and 4 touchdowns last year.
Tell me that production then, with that nuance, it's a big deal. All of a sudden, you are looking at a player that could also find you ways to move the football. And he's still getting targeted a lot in a season where Jeudy pops off, in a season where it starts out as the depth chart is Cooper, Jeudy.
Mm-hmm. And even
that's
start,
not a mistake.
Yeah, to start the year, week 1, 6 targets, week 2, 8 targets, then it dips, 3, 1, 4, 1, goes back up, week 7, 6, week 8, 12, 9, 8, 5, week 12, 14, 4, 6, 5, 5, 5.
that's not a mistake. Watson goes down and his targets go back up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's the start of the season and then Watson starts playing terribly and then he gets hurt.
Yep.
That's not a mistake.
I just...
So yeah, Zach, pop off.
I know, but ultimately, I think it's right. It's still a one-year deal. He still hasn't had that amazing season that I think many of us expected him to be or have coming out of Ole Miss. So I do want to temper my expectations a lot. I just look at him. I think the Bills were in on him early. I don't know how much Moore really wanted to sign with a team early. I think he wanted to wait. I think he's much happier to bet on himself. He said as much with Sal Capaccio yesterday, talking about betting on himself, being honest about circumstances and situations, being a lot of luck, and you needing a good situation to succeed in the NFL. Some guys don't, but the vast majority. We talk all the time about it with quarterbacks, all the time, that your landing spot is maybe the most important thing. Josh Allen on the Cleveland Browns is not Josh Allen on the Bills. Josh Allen on the Jets is not even close to Josh Allen on the Bills. But Josh Allen on the Bills is inarguably one of the top four quarterbacks in the NFL now, a walk-in Hall of Famer today based on what his career has been.
And it does have something to do with the fact that, like, even the Bills, like, he goes down with injury and then it starts to wake up a little bit for him after he has to sit for a couple weeks.
But what, honestly, looking at the two teams that Elijah Moore's been on, also could have been two teams Josh Allen winds up, the Jets or the Browns, what is Josh Allen's career? I'm talking about him being an NFL Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. He's already won an MVP. He's got multiple All-Pros, multiple Pro Bowls. He's set record books on fire. Is he a complete and total bust on the Jets or Browns?
Probably.
Probably.
Considering that it's the Jets and what they do with Sam Darnold, seeing ghosts, and the next thing you know, Kevin O'Connell gets him and molds him into the Sam Darnold we all were projecting him to be.
Exactly. So when I look at Moore...
And then there's Cleveland, who... They did do the right things with Baker Mayfield, but by the time Elijah Moore shows up, they've gotten rid of him.
They moved off of Baker Mayfield when he won a playoff game in Pittsburgh for the Browns. That is almost inexcusable. To be perfectly honest, knowing who the modern Browns are,
it's not even that
insanity.
It's that they punished Mayfield for trying to play through a shoulder injury,
when in reality he should have had infinite goodwill with them for that and winning a playoff game for them. He had resurrected that franchise, and they're like, actually, well, Deshaun Watson is available. Don't ask why, but he's available.
Don't ask why. And we did, actually.
That's insane to me. But so I look at Elijah Moore, and I loved – there was a clip from him yesterday when he was sitting with Sal talking about that he hasn't had that perfect situation. He is betting on himself. He does work really hard in season, out of season. But this is also a job. And he was in two really bad companies with bosses that sucked. I think most of us can...
Who hasn't lived that?
Yeah, I think most of us can acknowledge that and sympathize with that. Where, like, you're like, yeah, I show up on Monday and Tuesday and I'm pissed off. And I don't really want to be here. I'm going to clock in. I'm going to clock out when I'm supposed to. I'm going to do the bare minimum or a little bit better. And I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah.
He requested a trade year two. He knew what was going on with the Jets. And while some NFL fans and some NFL franchises won't like that, I respect a guy that took his career in his own hands and saw as a receiver maybe the position most dependent on another position. He went, this ain't working. Get me out. This is not working, and my career will suffer. To the point now, at 25 years old, he's signing a one-year deal for what, $5 million?
Yep. It is becoming a chance for him to really shine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you are excited in particular because you were a fan of the player when he came out in the draft. It is still day one of OTAs.
It is. So I'm not really reacting to OTAs. I'm more reacting to what did you see from Moore, which, you know.
Not see from Moore necessarily. Like, also, the mindset does have more to say right now than what you see on the field. Yeah, the fact that he's catching passes from Allen is nice. That means he's part of that top rotation.
And that's what I mean. What am I seeing? He's not catching passes from Mike White or Shane Buechele. Now, ultimately, he would have if Allen doesn't show up. But Allen was there. and he's catching passes from him. And every reporter that was there was like, hey, he looked smooth. Matt Parrino wrote in his piece, it looked like he had been in the Bills offense for years.
And that's where mindset comes in.
Yeah.
How quickly are you able to pick up the playbook? How quickly are you able to get comfortable within the offense? That was actually the struggle with Amari Cooper, was he really could not find that chemistry as an in-season addition, and it is a tougher thing.
Yep.
That was why I was perfectly fine with the idea of maybe if they were to bring back Cooper, I wouldn't be against it, because now he has an offseason to actually feel comfortable. This is something that Moore does get to do, though. He gets the offseason to work with everyone and feel like he's a part of this offense, because he's there from the beginning now.
And so, though, like you said, it's first day of OTAs. If that's already what I'm hearing, is that the chemistry might be there, or if not completely there, he looks like he's been in this offense for years. I don't care that it's day one of OTAs. If anything, that's a bigger positive to me of, oh, and he was a late free agent addition.
He was a late addition.
This is not a guy that was added to the team in March.
And you know what that screams to me? Leonard Floyd. Floyd was added even later.
That's right, he was.
But a late addition that has the opportunity to be an impact on your roster is still a great thing to have. Mm-hmm. You made a face.
Oh, no, nothing. Okay. Nothing. Don't worry.
Well, we won't worry about that, but we will take ourselves some time out here, finish this up, and then be ready to kick you over to Sabres Live at the top of the hour. Here on the North Town Automotive Extra Point Show, it's Kramer and Jones on WGR.
I'm honored that no matter what now, that's a part of my legacy, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be one of those guys to speak about it vocally and stand up front and really say, like, look, us linemen need something. There's so many guys that I have looked up to growing up, like the Pouncey twins. They were such a huge staple in, like, the cool level of being a big guy in the world, just being a cool lineman. I'm definitely honored. I'm honored to be a part of it. I'm honored to change football. There will be an award for offensive lineman now. Now, all other kids back in Jersey or Florida, wherever, they don't just have to be fast. And they can be happy with having something to push after and achieve.
Deion Dawkins, talking about the Protector of the Year, now that award being available to vote upon. And that was awesome. Him talking about, like, you know, the kids, you don't have to be fast. You can be great at pushing people around and have something to look up to and look forward to, or try to appreciate as you're watching and be like, I can't believe this lineman lost or something mm-hmm. like that. Like, that's awesome. Genuinely a great thing to see that happens. And if there's nothing else within his career, Deion Dawkins has a lasting legacy in the National Football League.
Yeah.
At minimum. As of now.
That is going to be, you know, it's maybe sad, but maybe not. I think if you ask Deion too, this will, without a doubt, 20, 30 years from now, overshadow his play.
It will, but it's a legacy.
Yeah.
It is something for the betterment of the game.
Yeah.
And that,
like you said there, I mean, like, now kids growing up don't have to just be fast.
Yes. It's for the ones that aren't fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the big deal is, I mean, sometimes you're working with the hand that you got. Let's be real here.
Yeah.
But again, it is great to know that, like he says it, like, he has a legacy now within the National Football League, no matter what else happens. And it's for the betterment of the league. That, in and of itself, is plenty rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously want to keep building on it. But yeah, he is now within the NFL's history, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I love that for him.
That's awesome.
You know, it's funny. We joke about it. I've said it now, I think, for the last few years. Deion's one of my favorite players to listen to talk.
He is one of the most fascinating people to hear on a regular basis.
Yeah, whenever I get a call from Sal going, hey, I got Deion sound in the Dropbox.
And you're like, awesome.
I get a little perked up. I'm like, yes. Like, I know there's going to be a good clip in there. He's going to say something interesting, fascinating, what have you. I also love it, too.
Interesting, Derek, fascinating, or just downright funny.
Just downright funny. I'll also tell you, too, I love his appearances on Colin Cowherd's show, The Herd, like, everything. But I will tell you, I also was really, like, it kind of made me happy and also told you just how much Deion Dawkins spearheaded this. For the AFC Championship, he was talking about the Protector of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
He just kind of serendipitously was like, Protector of the Year. He said at the AFC Championship game, what does it end up being? Well, yeah, it's Protector of the Year, baby. Like, that's what it is. I love his legacy that he's going to have now. It may, I think, ultimately overshadow his play, no matter how good it is. And he is one of the better left tackles in football, has been almost from day
one.
And
I think that helps.
It definitely helps. Don't disagree on that. But you also, as a player, want to be remembered more for your playing. But this happens in every avenue. Some players are far more known
for the media. But this also happens with offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Where the better you are, the less likely you are going to be talked about.
Yeah. Joe Thomas got kind of got the brunt of that. His issue was everyone knew who he was because it was like, you're the only good Cleveland Brown.
And now in Buffalo, it is. You are not the superstar. You are the reason he stays upright.
Yeah.
Or at least one of the big reasons he stays upright. And if nobody mentions you, that means you're doing a great job at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not because you are the only good Buffalo Bill, for example. It is. You don't get as much of the pub like during a broadcast, for example, because you're just not getting the ball. But you're also not being highlighted for something bad going on.
Yep.
It's perfect in a sense. Perfectly imperfect. How offensive linemen are looked at within a game broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's after a game when you see like a breakdown from like a Greg Cosell or a Ross Tucker that you see an offensive lineman really get their shine. It's not often in the broadcast.
That's going to do it for myself and Derek Kramer. Coming up next, Sabres Live, as we are getting very, very close to likely a repeat of last year's Stanley Cup Final. The Oilers now have a 3-1 series lead over the Stars. And tonight, the Florida Panthers can take out the Hurricanes. They hold a 3-1 series lead. It's in Carolina at 8 p.m. I'm sure the boys will have you covered on all of that. As that's coming up next, you're listening to WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.